The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn on November 17th, 2012. We're very close to our Thanksgiving weekend here in the USA, which begins on Thursday and is the official opening of our winter holiday season, which doesn't end until January 1st, which happens to be will be 2013. I have decided that this is a good time for me to give myself some time for myself and to take care of some personal needs and domestic chores, which I keep ignoring. So I will take time off from doing this Saturday show beginning next Saturday until January 5th, when Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn will resume. I promise you it will resume. Apart from any unforeseen tragedies or whatever. But I also want to say that the White Network is hoping to find some gifts from Santa in our post office box or our PayPal account to give us a good start into the new year. We really need it, folks. Wouldn't ask for it if we didn't. You can find our donate page on the menu bar of the White Network homepage at thewhitenetwork.com. Well, I was going to say that I'm bringing you, listeners, the gift of Gunter Deckert today, but strangely, Gunter Deckert has not appeared yet. I'm wondering about this red I'm seeing, but I don't see it affecting anything that I'm doing, so I'll continue. I don't know what happened to Gunter. I sent him very clear instructions, and as of yesterday, he said yes, he would be here, would follow all that, and he was going to be calling in about a half hour before the program started. But sometimes he's late, so I just thought he still might call in, and he still might call in. I don't know what might have happened, so I won't say too much about it, and I won't speculate, as I tend to do in my mind about, you know, why, but he's not on Skype. He's offline. His Skype account shows offline. Let me look one more time. Still does. So that means I can't, you know, I left him a Skype message, but I also sent him an email message, just a reminder this morning, actually about an hour and a half before, about 2 hours ago, I sent him that, but via email, just in case. But you know, I'm very good at making sure that my guests know exactly what they need to do. And you know, of course, Gunter was on the program about a month ago, and so he's, you know, nothing has changed, and he should remember it. But something's come up. And anyway, I haven't had a word from him, and he's not here. So I'm disappointed in that. I'm sure you are disappointed, you listeners who are already here listening. I was going to get the news in Europe from Gunter, but because he's there, but I'm not there. So all I have is what I read in the news, on the internet. So that's all I can bring to you today. But who knows where I'll go with this program if Gunter doesn't show up at all. Although, as I say, you know, he tends to maybe run late or things come up, and so you never know, he might call in. Well, it's 9 o'clock in Germany where he is, and 9 p.m. in 9 o'clock at night in the evening, and it's daytime here. So he should be home. He should be home is where he should be, but I hope nothing very bad has happened. in his world. So we'll just leave it at that. Okay. As I said, this program, Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn, has been a very successful program. And my intention for it was to have guests, as many guests from around the world as I could. That's why I made it for Saturday at this time, you know, a daytime show here in the U.S. Some people who I thought I would be able to have gone into a kind of a, you know, time where they didn't want to do anything or they were very busy with other things. So it hasn't gone quite the way I wanted it to. And as you can see from today, arranging for guests is always a questionable. It's always a tricky kind of a business and, not easy. Unless you just find anybody and everybody who's running around on the internet who would like to be on this program. I know many people would, but I'm very particular that I have people with only, with views that fit in, with my own views to an extent and the purpose and views of the White Network. So I really don't want to, I'm not interested in just giving out, views of different people, all these different, variety of viewpoints. I'm not interested in that at all. So, therefore I've most of the time had a guest, but sometimes I haven't. But you know, the guest business does get difficult, and that's why some people don't want to record their shows and don't want to even have guests. A lot of people don't have guests. A lot of radio hosts don't have guests because it's just easier to just prepare your own material and do your own thing in the long run. But a guest can be really great, and I've appreciated all my guests, and I'm sorry that I don't have the one I planned on today so far. So I will go into, I wanted to ask him about Jewish control of the press, of newspapers in Germany and in Europe, because it's come up, and I know I've been told way beforehand that in Germany they say, oh, the Jews don't own the newspapers in Germany. There are some Jewish papers, but they're mostly German owned. That is true, and I was wondering if that is also true in other European countries, in large part. But I do know that in Germany, it doesn't make any difference because the newspapers all cater to what the Jews want and are not going to say anything that the Jews are going to be upset about. They're not independent and free in that sense. And also it's true that in Germany, as many of my friends in Germany have, well, I don't have many. Several of my friends in Germany have told me that the Jews in Germany pretend that they're Germans. I mean, people think of them as Germans. They don't say they're Jews, except the active Jews who do. But many Germans act like Germans, and many Jews in Germany just go about as Germans, and they don't want to talk about Jews or being Jews or anything like that, and even if it's known that they are, nobody is allowed to, you know, it's just totally wrong, impolite, and more than that, it politically incorrect to bring that up or to mention that they're Jewish or to say that to make note of their Jewishness if they don't want to, if they don't bring it up themselves. So there's a lot going on there that isn't just who outwardly owns a newspaper or a television station or, you know, or a network or whatever. So that's just to clear that up. Now, one of the top stories that I wanted to talk about today was expanding compensation that the German government has agreed to for Nazi victims. That's how they put it, Nazi victims. And it's so true that as we continue, things that should be ending, things that had that were agreed to and that had control about them, or had not a control about them, but had a certain design about them, that like this compensation for Holocaust survivors, supposedly, that there would be an end to it. And in 1952, the German government under duress, really, they had no choice, but they were more than willing to do it in order to move ahead. They signed this compensation treaty with all these, Jewish organizations. I think they were world Jewish organizations, not the State of Israel. But they did agree to give a lot of money to Israel. So maybe Israel was at the bargaining table too, on its own. But, they agreed to give these pensions to all these Jews, and to give all this money to Israel too, because Israel was all these Jews were going to Israel, and Israel had to take care of them. And of course, Israel wasn't going to pay, as the Jews always do. They're not going to pay anything for the care of their own people, because it's not their responsibility. It's the responsibility of people who they managed to put the responsibility onto. And in this case, the main responsibility was put on the Germans. And so they, they were under the orders of the, so to speak, of the United States too, but they were, in order to make themselves, able to join into the family of nations and so on, they had to do this. So they agreed to do it, and they have been doing it, been paying this money out all this time. And as a matter of fact, the last thing I read was that Germany has paid an estimated $70 billion to Holocaust survivors and programs that aid survivors. This is according to the Jewish JCC, Jewish Central Committee or something. $70 billion just to these people, just to these people and the programs that aid them. That is the programs that manage the money, and that supposedly say that they're taking care of these survivors. But now, of course, the survivors are starting to die off. And the other shocking thing is that it is said in these articles and others that there are still, according to the Jews, there are 500,000 Holocaust survivors still alive today. Now, how does this work out? How many were alive in 1945? And therefore, how does it work out that 500,000 are still alive today? That is, if you mathematicians and statisticians can look at these numbers and they can estimate, this is how insurance companies work. They can estimate how many there were in 1945. And there have been studies and even a book or two on this, but I don't have those figures, in front of me. And I don't know how accurate what we have so far is, because, at that time, that these were written, it was not known that it was going to be said that in 2012, there were 500,000 Holocaust survivors alive, all of which are receiving money from not only Germany, but from other people in other places too. But let's just look at, keep our attention on Germany here. So Germany agreed Now the Jews have come back and said, oh, we found more survivors who haven't been getting any money. These are people who have been in Russia and in Eastern Europe, and they got left out because of the Iron Curtain. And then there are some others who are suffering more. They need more money than they've been getting because things are getting tough for them, and I'll go into the details of that in a minute. But because it's really so sickening. But so Germany, naturally, its entire way of dealing with this is to just go along with it, to just give the Jews what they want, because it's cheaper for them than to fight the Jews and then have everybody attacking them and then have their reputation always being slandered and so on. They don't want that. They would rather just, you know, if it's something that they think they can manage, they'll pay it over a period of time rather than have to deal with all that bad reputation stuff that they get. And on all the things that the Jewish jury, international jury, can bring to bear on harming the German, in large part the German reputation and their products that they sell. You know, Germany lives off its exports. It's always has been a strong, big exporting nation. It's a fantastic manufacturing nation, makes all kinds of great products. But if people stop buying their products, then they're really in trouble. So they'd rather keep people buying their products and then pay out large sums of money for this or that. So in the Jewish chairman of the Conference on Jewish Material Claims Against Germany, Julius Berman. He arranged to have a ceremony with the German finance minister to sign this agreement, officially agreeing to revisions to the original 1952 compensation treaty. So while, you know, in my estimation, that treaty was complete and final when it was signed in 1952, and Germany has not fallen short of what it agreed to do at all. So Germany is not legally responsible for signing another treaty or revising this treaty or doing anything more. They're not legally responsible at all. So that's not the reason they're doing it. They're doing it, as I said, just to keep the peace with these troublesome Jews. And so this Conference of Jewish Material Claims, which was formed back then in the 50s, early 50s, right after, Israel became a nation, a state. They arranged for this big ceremony to be held at Berlin's Jewish Museum. Naturally, you know, they put it on their own turf. So this finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, has to go to the Berlin Jewish Museum to sign this thing. And what it does is it increases pensions for those living in Eastern Europe and broadening who is eligible for payments. So they say that contributions to home care for survivors had already been increased. But now here's what they write. Now, you know, then again, they write this in their news. This is, I found this. This particular story is taken from yahoo.com, but I don't know where it originated. But they put in here, and this is what Julius Berman told the press ahead of the ceremony. Survivors are passing away on a daily basis, but the other side is that individual survivors are needing more help than ever. Oh, yeah. Why? Well, and of course, you know, I ask always, why don't the Jews help their people? But I brought that up in the beginning. You know, they will never do it. They get billions from everyone else, and they want other people to pay for their existence. Really, they want other people to do it all. So this Berman goes on and says, while a person came out of the camps very young. This is the propaganda. A person came out of the camps very young and eventually developed a life of their own over the years. The impact of what happened at the beginning is now coming to the fore. Whether it's mentally or physically, they're sicker than their peers of the same age. Well, who says they're sicker than their peers of the same age? Or who says that what happened to them is now coming to the fore? And who says some Jewish psychiatrist that they got to talk to a few survivors and say, oh, they're becoming more ill as they get older because here's why. Here's a more further quote from Berman. Their finances have suffered from the years of lost education and lost family assets. And with their careers and child rearing behind them, they have more time alone with their memories of terror and loss. Well, play the violins, this people seem to never get tired of hearing this, or if they do get tired of hearing it, it doesn't matter because the press puts this out anyway. It's the Jewish controlled, the Jewish press or the Jewish controlled press or the Jewish dominated press, whatever you want to call it, who just keep up this kind of language. And those of us who read it, like I can just discount it all, but I imagine it makes some kind of an impression on a lot of people who are not clear about what really happened. They may be tired of hearing about these Jews, but they still continue to think, well, this really was a horrible thing that happened to them and has ruined their lives. And now, of course, it's supposedly ruined the lives of their children, their grandchildren, and now it's going to be everybody ever associated with them whose lives are going to be ruined forever from what happened in the 1940s. So they say, then this Holocaust survivor, Roman Kent, said that his experience is something that he will never be able to forget. Listen to this. He says, just witnessing the atrocities committed at the gate entering Auschwitz-Birkenau is more than enough to keep me awake at night until the end of time. What a bunch of atrocities committed at the gate entering Auschwitz-Birkenau. What? Supposedly, in the worst case scenarios, they were yelling at people to hurry up and, get out of get in line or whatever. And then they were putting people in different lines, and then they were sending some of them to the gas chamber immediately, for which there is zero evidence, and which they are getting more and more in trouble about proving. And if they were sending all these people to gas chambers, why are there all these people who survived Auschwitz-Birkenau and going around with these tattoos and on the lists of the survivors? Well, and then to say that it keeps him awake at night, and it will do so until the end of time. Oh boy, you can't get these people. Nobody can do a better job than they do of this schmaltzy, self-pitying baloney. So Schauble. Now here's the German guilt trip going on. What is Schauble? Schauble has to go along with this stuff. So he says, the German finance minister, he says at this ceremony, quote, this is direct assistance which will immediately benefit those concerned, this money that he's passing over. In doing so, Germany is renewing its commitment to its historical responsibility towards Jewish victims of the Holocaust. And he noted, and this, you see again, now this is not a quote. So I wonder, since these are Jewish controlled news articles, I wonder if they put what they say he said in a little different language than he said it to make it sound like I'm sure it is, because in some places they quote and in other places they don't quote. See, like here, they go on to say Schauble noted that the task of ensuring reparations to all survivors was complicated by the unfathomable dimensions of the Holocaust. Would he say that the unfathomable? He may have. He may have. In which 6 million Jews were murdered, and that payments were a gesture that could only fall short in light of their suffering. Now, they attribute this to the German finance minister saying this, but I doubt he would have put it in this quite in this way, in such extreme way, and paid such homage to the Jews and their incredible suffering, which this money that Germany is paying, it doesn't even cover properly. I mean, they can never pay enough to pay back, to make up for what they did. And then I have the, you know, the $670 billion that they've paid so far, and that there's still 500,000 Holocaust survivors alive today. Well, you know, I'll just bring up here that Bradley Smith's report, just the new one for November, was just made available on the internet to people as a PDF, and you can go to CODO and find it. But his opening story in that is about these young, it's about Holocaust obsession. Those who are obsessed and continue to be obsessed more and more, because we know it's a plan. You know, it's not a real obsession. It's something they're pushing as an agenda, but one of the latest things is these youngsters who, children and mostly grandchildren of supposed Holocaust survivors, someone in their family who has a tattoo on their forearm. And of course, having a tattoo on your forearm from Auschwitz only means that you were in a supposed death camp, but you're never put to death, right? How come? You know, how come you survived so many, for so long there, and there's so many of them. There's so many of these people with these numbers. So that's a question they don't like to ask, but, these grandkids have gotten into this thing of putting their grandparents' tattoo on themselves, either on their arm or maybe somewhere else. One girl put it on her ankle. You know, tattoos are kind of popular on ankles and different places of your body. And so now these Jews have decided that they would put the tattoo of their loved one, who is still alive and receiving benefits, on themselves as a point of memory, but really as a point to keep the whole thing going. I wonder how much this will catch on. But, I mean, it really shows the extent that these Jews will go to and how much we need to have zero sympathy. I mean, zero sympathy for this kind of shenanigans, because it's just I never can remember that word. It's not bribery. It's the other word where you just It's a form of control over people. It's a form of stealing money from people. It's just a whole criminal establishment. It's not something that anybody should have any sympathy for. And this is the kind of thing that needs to be exposed. If we had more workers doing it, it would help. Now, what really struck me, though, from this story, to another very current story dealing with Germany, is how this overdone sympathy for Jews among what Germans have to say and, you know, punish themselves and so on. This great sympathy for Jews who suffered some discomfort, because you can be a Holocaust or of all these Holocaust survivors, some of them just have to say that they had to hide out for a while, or they were in some kind of a camp for a while, and some of them were in Russian camps. So they weren't even run by Germans. But the Germans are paying these people who were put into camps by by the Soviets at that time. But anyway, maybe supposedly they investigate this, but I doubt that that they're all they were all in Nazi camps. So, but these people get all this sympathy, but the Germans don't give have a complete lack of sympathy for people in Palestine who are suffering right now. I mean, this is really obscene. Now, when I say the people of the Germans, it's not the German people. They do, they are in favor of the Palestinians in those disagreements with Israel, but the German government, because there's was just a story. Again, this comes from Reuters, which is a totally Jewish news service, and I think that when they rewrite these from what the reporter turns in or whatever, you know, they're written in a way to make people more sympathetic to Jews in Israel always. But this one says that German Chancellor Angela Merkel called on Egypt to use its influence on Hamas to bring the violence to an end, but she added that Israel has had the right and obligation to protect its population. So she's standing up for Israel. She's not standing up for the Palestinians. And then her spokesman, Georg Streiter, told a news conference, quote, Hamas in Gaza is responsible for the outbreak of violence. And then there is no justification for the shooting of rockets at Israel, which has led to massive suffering of the civilian population. Massive, massive. Whereas when we see what the Israel has done to Gaza and other places in that area, and what it is doing right now compared to what kind of suffering the Palestinians are able to inflict on the Israelis is just ridiculous. I mean, there's no comparison, and yet the official German stand on this, as the United States and Britain have come out exactly the same. They're blaming it all on Hamas in Palestine, where they call some kind of a, you know, I don't know. I don't know if they're labeled as a terrorist organization or not, but they're not considered to be the government. They're not considered to be anything official. They're considered to be some kind of, you know, outlaw organization. So, this is what we have to deal with. But you don't know what people really think. You know, what most of these people really think, not just these people whose names I've mentioned, but, you know, even many people in government in Germany, Britain, and the United States, and, of course, the people themselves, so many don't go along with any of this kind of thinking. But this is what we get in the newspapers. This is what we get in our press, in our media. Now, another story coming from Reuters and dealing with Merkel in Germany is this meeting that Merkel and Putin had the Russian President Putin had in the last few days. And they played it up as this frosty relationship between the two countries because of human rights. You know, because again, this is what the Jews want to do. And Reuters is totally Jewish, as I said. And of course, they all end up being putting out the Jewish point of view. But they put it out the way they want to put it out. And I don't know how frosty the relationship really is between Merkel and Putin, because they do, Germany and Russia do all kinds of trade together. And they signed all sorts of trade bills, and they didn't have any problem with those. But they played up that there's some kind of a human rights problem that Germany feels that, and Merkel has said that that she thinks they're not defending the human rights of their people. And here's some of the stuff that came out of that that you read in the papers. This is from Putin. Putin is quoted as saying, as for political and ideological issues, meaning this stuff, we hear our partners. We hear our partners, but they hear about what's happening from very far away. He's saying, you know, they're not really informed about what's really happening in Russia. They're hearing it. They're hearing other stuff from people who don't know. You know, that one of the things that the West has been attacking Putin on is this, is his handling and the Russian government's handling of the Pussy Riot, so-called Pussy Riot, this female band called the, what were they? Something Pussy, the Pussies. They're disgusting. Couple of them are lesbians, and they did this very disgusting, insulting, act in a big church in Moscow, a big cathedral, I think. And they just broke in there and did a lot of damage. And then they did this lesbian type sex act there and insulted, Putin and his government. And, they were arrested and tried and, jailed. And one of them has been released since then. And the Western world has just gone crazy defending these women and attacking Russia over human rights violations and so on. So, but Putin doesn't show himself up very well sometimes either. And as he was talking to the reporters, they say that he accused, and defending himself, he accused one of the Pussy Riot members of taking part in an anti-Semitic protest, while another radical, well, that's enough to say. So, you know, he's pretending like, or he's saying that, well, you know, these are not good women because one of them was in an anti-Semitic protest. So he's playing up to the Jews there. And, you know, who doesn't play up to the Jews? What government leader doesn't play up to the Jews? Not a single one. Some of the opposition political groups don't. But they haven't become part of the government. And when you become part of the government, it seems like, or maybe just those who manage to, all play up to the Jews. So supposedly there was criticism from Germany of lack of freedom of information in Russia. See how Germany, who is so guilty itself of lack of freedom for its citizens, unless they follow the left line of thinking, is so guilty of that, but they're busy accusing whoever they can accuse of doing that, particularly Russia. So, you know, Merkel said that Israel had the right and obligation to protect its population, as I said earlier. Well, this is something that Germany does not do, in my opinion. There's a large part of the German population that is not protected in Germany from violence and from violations not giving them their human or civil rights. Well, they don't talk too much about civil rights here, but many Germans don't have civil rights, and they think that they can explain that away. And the way that Germany actually protects its population from attacks or violence, whatever, is by simply caving in to every demand from outsiders, just like they cave in to the Jews' demand that they pay more Holocaust survivor compensation, or whatever the United States asks them to do, or whatever they're demanded to do, they go along with it. These leaders, they're not really leaders of the German people. The German people have been taught, indoctrinated, that they have to stay away from certain things and have to go along with what the rest of the world wants because they're so guilty. And these leaders just play along that way, and they don't do anything for their own people. Not really, because right now, they will do a lot for foreigners, just like our government does in the United States, and all these governments are doing, all these European governments are doing. They'll do a lot. They'll stand up for the foreigners, for the immigrants, for the non-native people. But they won't stand up at all. In fact, they are insulting to and careless of their own real people. You know, the people that are really a part of their nation, that have always been, always made up their nation. So we have all this. You know, you don't know who to be for. I mean, sometimes I can like what Putin is doing, but sometimes he's not so good either. And as he was shrugging off this criticism of a lack of freedom of information in Russia, which is something that Merkel had aimed at him before their talks, he said that five German states had no laws guaranteeing such freedom of information. So that's probably true. It's not easy to get get information of whatever kind you want in Germany. Anywhere, but particularly these five, but some of them have laws saying that they guarantee it, but five German states don't. Putin said that he pushed a series of laws since May, which critics say are intended to stifle dissent. Well, this word critics should be really noticed, because critics are present in every one of our societies, in order to constantly stir up trouble and criticize in order to destabilize our governments. Critics say that the laws that he passed are intended to stifle dissent. Whereas he's passing laws in order to keep his country stable from all these types of critics and rebels and so on who are running around trying to destabilize the nation. And the West, as I said, you know, the West condemned Putin over jailing these two members of the Pussy Riot. I don't know if that's what they're called or not. They're calling it here the Pussy Riot. But here's what's interesting, really disgusting. The German town of Wittenberg, I wanted to ask Gunter about this. The German town of Wittenberg was criticized for nominating the group for a Freedom of Speech Prize in October. So this stupid town in Germany, well, it's not a stupid town, but you know, I mean, what possesses these people? The town leaders, obviously, it was probably a very liberal town, decided to nominate this the Pussy Riot group for a Freedom of Speech Prize in October. I guess they give out a Freedom of Speech Prize. Well, you know, Gunter is from the state of that's Wittenberg. I don't, it's not the same as this town of Wittenberg. Okay, but it might be in his neighborhood there. I learned that Putin had speaks German, and he was for 5 years with the KGB in Dresden. And it says that he had a better relationship with her predecessor, Gerhard Schroeder, than he has with Merkel. Well, Merkel is such a patsy to the, she's such a leftist. That's probably why, because Putin wants to move, you know, wants to keep national, has a lot of nationalists sympathies and tendencies. He wants a strong Russia as Russian. I disagree with a lot of the things he's doing, particularly this idea about, you know, World War II history, but you got to understand he's Russian, and so that's where he's coming from. But Merkel, you know, is such a lefty that she wouldn't like that, and they don't get along so well for that reason. Well, enough of that. Now, here's the thing that really makes me ill, and I thought Gunter and I might have a good time talking about it, And that is, and we, you know, I sent him all these stories and everything, and he was all prepared to do it. So I really think since he's still not here, let me look at his, he's still not on Skype at all. Something, I can't imagine he just forgot out of the blue like that. Something, now I'm going to start worrying about him. Oh, well, we have this Russian, the story about the Russian MP. Now, from being a little bit friendly toward the Russians there, now I'm really disgusted with some of this attitude from Russia, because this Russian MP, and who is he but an MP, but they play this story out. Well, they've played it up in Germany quite a bit, in, say, for example, in Der Spiegel, because Der Spiegel is so communist and so, I call it communist, other people would call it leftist. The Der Spiegel, the weekly magazine that's such a leading influence of media influence in Germany, they are so left, and oh, they're so anti-Hitler. They don't miss a beat, just like the British newspapers don't miss a chance to attack Adolf Hitler and the National Socialists. Neither does Der Spiegel in Germany. And they played up this story in lots of photographs of this silly Russian MP. Now, what is this? What, a parliamentarian? Who is that? It's like one of our congressmen, you know, that has very little influence but can have a big mouth. Well, he made this big statement that he's trying to raise 2.2 euros or $2.8 million to purchase the house that Hitler grew up in Braunau. What is that? Do I have that here? Well, you know, that one on the border between Austria and Germany, just inside of Austria. I've got the name confused now in my mind. Braunau, though. And this home has been standing, it hasn't been standing vacant. It's got a big rock outside of it saying, oh, Adolf Hitler was born here in this particular bedroom. And, you know, he's the murderer of 6 million Jews. And this is such a shame, so shameful for Germany and so on. Well, you know, there's a lot of people, most people in Austria, it's a very nicely kept up building. And this woman who owns it has, she owns it now. I don't know if she's always owned it, but it's been rented, and it was even used by the Austrian government for a while. And it has been used by some kind of agency. I don't know if it was maybe a government agency, but it's some other kind of agency for now. And it might be empty right at the moment. And so everybody now the Jews want to turn it into a museum, you know, which they can point out more of their propaganda, which I hate all that stuff. It's everywhere over there. The Jews in control of, they're not Jewish, all Jewish museums. They're also government, museums and government institutions. I forget now what they're called. Documentation centers is what they're called. All over the place. Which are at landmarks from the Hitler times, landmarks which should be accepted as part of Germany's history, but instead they have to take them over and turn them into pro-Jewish or Jewish even places where they have little exhibits and so on, and they point out how horrible the Nazis were and how, you know, how much damage they did and how they never should ever be allowed to return and so on. So this is what they want to do with this house in Austria that Hitler was born in. And they showed a photograph there from 1945 of two American soldiers inside the very room that Hitler was supposedly born in. He said it was the room he was born in. And there was nothing in there. It was totally empty. This was, I think it was July 1945. And they're writing stuff on the wall. You know, they're defacing the walls. Actually, they're just writing their names. You know how these immature American soldiers were? They wanted to write their name everywhere in Europe because they'd never you know, it seemed like such a foreign place to them, and they wanted to leave a mark. So, you know, it's kind of like Kilroy was here. You know, they write their name and the date and who they are and so on. They're allowed to do things like that. It really turns me off when I see that. But now this man wants to buy the, and he says, if I could, he wants to buy it and demolish the house. You know, he's a Russian patriot. He says, I would buy this property in the blink of an eye if I had that kind of money myself, but I do not. He told the Russian Daily Izvestia last week. If I were to receive financial help, he wants people to donate the money to him, or some, maybe the Jews to do it, I don't know, I would buy the house and destroy it demonstratively. Wipe it off the face of the earth is what he wants to do. And he says that he has gotten support from an unlikely quarter, but not from the communists. I can't pick. Everything is. He goes on to say, this Russian, everything that is connected to fascism should be wiped off the face of the earth. No one should even know that place ever existed. See, now this really angers me because it brings up how they want to destroy history. They don't want people to know history. They don't want things that were a part of the history to exist, just like these places that are now documentation centers. They didn't have the, maybe they didn't feel like they wanted to, or they didn't have the guts to, or they didn't think it was wise to destroy all these buildings, some very beautiful, wonderful pieces of architecture in Germany that were used by the National Socialists and are associated with them. But they didn't want, you know, of course, to keep them from being pilgrimage centers and things like that. They turn them into these documentation centers where they plaster it all over with. First, they remove all the National Socialist nice ornamentations and decorations and statuary and, you know, wonderful sculpture and so on. I've talked about that in the past, that like 90% of the outdoor sculptures that were created by one of the greatest sculptors of the 20th century, Arno Brecker, a German, and he was a National Socialist, and he was Hitler's favorite sculptor. They destroyed it. It's gone. It's utterly destroyed. The things that he had that were indoors, that were in museums or, you know, inside, remain. But all this stuff that was outdoors, and there was a lot of things, and he also created ornamentations for buildings and so on. It's all been destroyed. This is how these people are. They can't stand it. They don't want anybody to know about it. They don't want anybody to see it because they might be attracted to it. They might like it. So, you know, he's making a big bunch of noise, and they play it up in the Jewish media, which is what I mean, mainstream media, which is all Jewish, all caters to Jews. And he's not going to get the money. And besides, I hope he doesn't. I hope nobody will destroy it. But it's only the house that Hitler was born in. But you know, it's just kind of bad when they have to. They would like it if nobody ever heard of Hitler. They don't really want it. They would prefer that over continuing to use Hitler as someone to demonize. They would prefer if that whole era just disappeared down a big hole and nobody ever knew about it. And that is, I'm sure, the goal for eventually, when we get to the real 1984 Orwell world, it won't come up ever. So, but the owner of the house at this time, this house in Braunau, is named Gerlinde P. They never publish the last names of people in Germany who are not guilty of a crime, so that they won't be bothered by others. But Gerlinde P. has shown no indication that she is interested in selling. The state pays her a monthly rent of 5,000 euros for the use of the property, and she is not open to people buying it from her. So let's hope, well, she can keep that going. All right, another. Oh, I've only got 5 minutes. No, I've still got listeners. Maybe you're hoping that Gunter will come on, but I'm losing hope for that now. I don't think he will now. But we can still take his call. And also, I want to tell you that listeners, you are very welcome to call in and talk about any of this or anything along these lines that you think is important in the second hour. And the number is, of course, you start out with 1, 830-443-4911. 830-443-4911. And I will be able to take your call. If you do call, keep the phone ringing until I answer the phone, okay? If you don't get an answer in, say, 4 rings or so, don't hang up, because there may be a reason why I'm not getting it right or something. So just, but once you hang up, it's hard to call again. So just don't do that. If you call, just stay on. And I'm going to go to some more of these stories when we get back in the second hour. Starting out with this story about Germany's far-right NPD party going to court to confirm its constitutionality. And then going on to some other pretty interesting things that I have plenty here, actually. So we'll be all right. And if you want to call in, as I said, you're welcome to do so. This is Carolyn Yeager, and this is Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. And it's the last one until January 5th or so. Thank you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Yeager. I'm Carolyn, and I'm here with you on Saturday Afternoon. And as I announced at the beginning of the show, this is going to be the last Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn program until our holiday season is over, until I think it's January 5th or something like that, is the first Saturday in January 2013. I'm doing this in order to take care of a lot of things that I need to take care of for myself that I'm not getting done, and my schedule is just too hectic. So I'm hoping to spend the next few Saturdays and maybe some other time too that I would be preparing working at some of this stuff and getting through it all. And so for the Saturday Afternoon show, I do wish you all a wonderful holiday season. I hate calling it that, a wonderful Thanksgiving coming up, and then Christmas time. I do like the Christmas season very much. I don't do a whole lot, but it's I like observing all the lights and all the festivities and the music and just the cheeriness of it all. So that's what I hope will be the experience for you. And, I will be back in January renewed and raring to go, with more of these programs. Of course, I will continue with the Heretics Hour and with the International Jew program. I would not, just drop out altogether. I'm just going to, let this particular program take a rest for I think it's going to be about 6 weeks, six programs in all. So, I checked my email and there was not anything there. Still isn't. Okay. And, as I invited you, anyone who wants to call in, be brave and call in and have anything to say. The number is 1-830-443-4911. People tell me I don't say the number often enough, but it is posted on the front page of the White Network, where the listen box is, 830-443-4911. Okay, I do have enough listeners to get a caller or two from them if they want to call in, so we'll see. Now, going on to this next story about talking about Germany and Europe today, I don't have a whole lot about Europe. I thought Gunter might, but as I don't know, I guess I should mention again that Gunter Deckert, who I intended and announced as my guest today, has inexplicably not shown up and is not on his Skype account. He doesn't show him on Skype. So there's no way for me to, I did leave him a message there, but there's nothing I can do about it. For some reason, something came up for him. And, you know, it is nighttime there, but that wouldn't in itself be the reason at all. He's totally aware of how to do this and that he was going to be on and so on. We've talked about it for several days together. So, anyway, something for some reason. I hope that when I find out the reason, it isn't something so minor that if it is, I'll blow my top. You can be sure of that. And actually I would prefer that it was something like that rather than something serious. But let me just go on with the program. I already did that. I'm moving myself around here. Unexpectedly here. All right. The German far right, NPD. You know, the NPD in Germany, I went too far. The NPD in Germany is, the National Democratic Party or National Party of Deutschland, however you want to put it. They call it a far right party. It's actually a nationalist party, and it was formed in the 1950s. It's one of the oldest parties. Some of those parties go way back to the Weimar period, even before. So I guess it's not one of the oldest parties, but it was formed shortly after the war, when actually things were easier at that time for nationalists. And even for National Socialists, ex-National Socialists, and things like that, to talk about things much easier, much more open then, than it than it is now, and it has become increasingly dictatorial and closed, increasingly forced leftism, just like in our country, in the United States here. It has in an effort to stop people from going back to that, breaking out at all, because people don't give it up. And they hoped that their campaign, their anti-Nazification campaign and so on, would work, but it didn't really work. And, the truth doesn't die. The truth just doesn't die. So this party is still running. In fact, Gunter Deckert was the head of this party, the leader of the party. I don't think the title is president. I don't know what it's called. But for about 5 years, and they got at him by putting him, setting him up for a criminal case. And he was ended up very, very unfairly. It was shocking the way those court cases went for him, getting him incarcerated in prison for 5 years. His first sentence was 2 or 2 to 2.5 years. And then while he was in prison, they found things that they could add to it, and they tried him, while he was in prison, added more time because they didn't want him to come out. He was a very effective nationalist leader and very brave. Now they're a little more careful. They go about things a little differently because there's an effort to ban the party. This is what they tried in the past to ban the party, and the Supreme Court found it to be unconstitutional to do that. And so they had to give up on that. Now, because they came up with this NSU fake terror group, they're trying to use that to ban the party again. And, Germany has got such extreme leftists in it, and yet they are considered to be perfectly reputable and respectable people. But if you're anything to do with nationalism, well, you are totally you're disrespected. And this, I want to point out to you some of the things that these other left-wing leaders in the country say about the NPD and how insulting and rude it is. And they get away with it. Nobody cares. I mean, it's published in the papers and so on. And if anyone in the NPD said something like that or talked like that, oh, they would be excoriated and said, oh, we have to get rid of this party. These people are so uncivil and so on. But anyway, what they've done, the NPD, is something that's never been done before, I guess. They have gone to the country's highest court to confirm that they are a constitutional party, so to avert a possible future attempt by the government to outlaw them. And the mainstream politicians have dismissed the move as a populist stunt and say it is high time authorities move ahead with their bid to ban the party. Now, I want you to think that things like this go on also in other countries in Europe, and it could very well come about in this country where any kind of a party that would try to form that would be really really nationalist and have even a slight hint, even and have some racial basis to it. And anything like that could be also, they might be able to get away with that here. If we actually got a party that was as strong as the NPD in Germany, and, really it's not strong, but it's too strong. It's stronger than anything here, ever has been. And, has a consistent membership. So this Ralph Jaeger, sorry, he's got the same name as me. He's the interior minister of he's the interior minister of the western state of North Rhine-Westphalia. You have state governments there that are pretty strong, then the national government, national parliament. And he said that what the NPD was doing was a transparent and brazen attempt to mislead the public. Well, of course it's not. You know, they're trying to secure the fact that they can exist and not be banned out of existence and made to be illegal. They would become illegal to be a member of that party. There would be no nationalist or no right-wing party at all, because what they call moderate right, which is Merkel's party, the Christian Democrats, is not anything that you and I would think of as right, not at all. So there's the interior minister of another state of Lower Saxony, Uwe Schunemann, called the move pure populism. Oh, they're trying to appeal, you know, all of a sudden populism is bad news. Thomas Oppermann, a lawyer for the opposition Social Democratic Party, okay, a lawmaker, okay, he's just a member of the Bundestag as a Social Democrat. He said it was high time the government launched its case to outlaw the NPD. And a quote from him: "We should demonstrate great determination against the NPD. The chances of success for ban proceedings are better than ever," unquote. And then he goes on, 1,000 pages of usable evidence prove the NPD is anti-Semitic, anti-democratic, and in parts ready to commit violence. He says 1,000 pages of usable evidence. Well, they don't say in here what that is. I don't know if that's stuff from this phony NSU investigation, National Socialist, what's it called? National Socialist Union something. That's this so-called terror group of three people, two of which are now dead, and this woman, Beta Chape, is in prison. Supposedly her trial is coming up, and there is a lot of terrible stuff being said about her in the German press, which Steve from Chicago keeps telling me about. But sometimes he says where the story is. They're all in German, but I can't I can't find it on Google. It doesn't come up. So, or sometimes I have, and they don't say much. So, but they're just beating on her in the press, which shouldn't be allowed. In fact, I think I'm going to come up with a statement here coming up somewhere that I just noticed as I was reading over this stuff. That's pretty shocking. We'll see. But, you know, it really should never be allowed what they're saying. Oh, it was this thing from Der Spiegel. I'll see before I go I might get to it. But here it says, it reminds us that in 2003, when they tried to outlaw the party before, so about 10 years ago, because it failed because of the presence of government informants in the party's ranks. And that's the same as today. The NPD has so many government informants as members of the party. And when they discover this, they say, well, what they're doing is at the instigation mostly of government informants and government agents, because they act like real members, and they're trying to get the party to do things that will get the party in trouble. See, they're the more extreme members, or pretend to be, and they advocate things that will get the party in trouble. And so for whatever they have, the evidence of that going on is all from these government agents. So the Constitutional Court threw it out. And it said that the NPD policies were being shaped in part by government agents. So now the worst party of all in Germany is the Green Party. And the Green Party, one of their representatives is Volker Beck. And he said this: since the NPD was rightly deemed to be hostile to the Constitution, but in the end, the question will have to be clarified whether the NPD is in a position to endanger our democracy now. And that's a question that's not so easy to answer in the affirmative. Well, of course, it's not endangering. The NPD is not endangering anything. But here he says, he claims that it's rightly deemed to be hostile to the Constitution. You know, what kind of a Constitution do they have there? Of course, in their Constitution, It says that National Socialism is outlawed and can never, ever be allowed in Germany, and that's in their constitution. That's why if you advocate for National Socialism in Germany of any form, not if it's not the old one, some new version of it, you are carrying out something against the Constitution, and that's how they take you to trial as being what do they call that? Inciting against the Constitution or something like that. So this is what he's going by. So it's a sick state. It's a sick, sick place. And so the NPD cannot say that they are National Socialists, and they say that they're not. They're just nationalists. And, they just have to be so careful, not like the way we can still be here in the United States because we have the First Amendment. All right. Talking about the way government agents are involved in what they call the far right, in any kind of a nationalist group, there's a story about the German police document that says informants fuel the far right extremism. Well, this is a paper that has come out, and it became all big news in Germany in the news. It's dated. No, that's not it. That's something else. Anyway, it was just made public. I don't know when it was written, but it was just made public that about how in investigating this NSU thing that I was just talking about. This is so weird. I mean, this NSU thing. They say, oh, here's a statement. Here's a statement I was talking about a little bit ago. Okay, I'm going to read this paragraph from this article in Der Spiegel from just last week. German law enforcement authorities uncovered the NSU, that's that National Socialist Underground, that's what, not union, that's that group of three people that they are accusing of being terrorists. The National Socialist Underground right-wing terrorist cell almost exactly a year ago. On November 4th, 2011, the police found the bodies of Uwe Mundlos and Uwe Bernhardt in a camper parked in the eastern city of Eisenach. The National Socialist Underground claimed responsibility for killing at least 9 men and a policewoman during a 7-year murder spree that began in 2000. Oh, I wish Gunter was here, because I say that's absolutely false, and I wonder what he would say about it. There's no claim. They don't have any claim of responsibility for killing these people. This is what they've been searching for, something. They found, you know what they found? Maybe with this lying news article, which isn't even, it's more almost like an editorial by Der Spiegel. They are so bad there, so bad. I lost my thought there. They might be referring to that, some kind of a video, DVD that they found. In the remains of this burned building that they say Beate Chape set on fire to burn up all the evidence, but they found everything they needed there that wasn't burned. So she did a poor job. She herself is still not saying a word. She still hasn't said a word about it. But this video was something about that old theme of the Pink Panther. It was a Pink Panther cartoony thing, and it showed clips from Pink Panther cartoons. And supposedly the way it was put together, it was some kind of a message from these two guys saying that they killed all these Turks, and 9 of them, and they were claiming responsibility for it. Well, they never did that. It doesn't say that, but they're just interpreting that this is what they were getting at. Why they would ever do it, none of it makes any sense. I don't think it'll stand up at all in court. But see, this irresponsible media says this and says that they claimed responsibility for killing these people, which never, ever happened. How they get away with it, because you have to sue them. And who's going to sue them? This woman who's in prison, you know, and in solitary confinement, is she going to sue? Is anybody going to sue on her behalf? Even the NPD is not going to sue, because they want to keep themselves as far away from that as possible, because they're trying the government and the whoever's behind all this stuff, the security services, are trying to tie this National Socialist Underground, trying to tie the NPD, that Nationalist Party that I just talked about, to this group. And they have failed to do so in any real way, so that the NPD is staying as far away from this as possible. It's not going to speak out. It's not going to try to defend these three people. It's not going to pay off for them at all. And I can understand why their policy would be that. I mean, it's a losing situation for anyone. So this poor woman has got nobody on her side except this court-appointed lawyer who doesn't stand a chance against the huge array of lawyers and prosecutors and investigators who are working on trying to build this case and turn it into something. So, you know, this is frightening. It's something that should be studied and realize how they operate, and don't think it can't happen here. So, going on to the German intelligence services. It says the government's failure in fighting, this is in this article, okay, in fighting right-wing terrorists, as they keep trying to convince people that there's a bunch of right-wing terrorists in Germany, have plunged the domestic intelligence service into the worst crisis since it was established. It was set up in post-war Germany. Set up, all right, already, in post-war Germany, they set up their domestic intelligence service. You know, well, the Americans would have done that. They were in charge of it. To identify and stop the spread of precisely the kind of extremist thinking that allowed the Nazis to rise to power in the 1930s. So they had to stop any kind of thinking like that. So you couldn't be a nationalist at all, because you'd turn into, you'd have another rise of the power of the right, of what Hitler represented. All right, the trio of neo-Nazis that made up the NSU, again, you know, trio, three of them. And you don't even know if they're neo-Nazis, but they may have been in the same way that I am, that you're sympathetic and you want the truth about, you want the truth to be known about these people and this time period and so on. They want the truth for Germany. Poor Germans who want the truth for Germany. What a battle they've got. It says this trio was surrounded by informants linked with the Office for the Protection of the Constitution. And this fellow Kai that they talk about earlier in this article, which I didn't copy that part because it's too much, too long, but they had a long interview with this guy named Kai D, K-A-I, who was bragging about how he was an informant, he was an undercover agent, you know, NPD maybe, but with this National Socialist Underground, supposedly. And he knew all everything, and he was telling the government what was going on and so on. And then they were asking him, well, but you work for... No. He was bragging about being a great member of this nationalist parties and nationalist groups in Germany, and all that he had done and all that he was responsible for. He was playing that he was the real thing. And then they asked him about, wasn't he working for the security services? And they said he right away got real, you know, quiet and upset and so on. He said, no, he wasn't at all. But they have proof that he was. They have that all the documents. So he was another one of these agents. But they say that he was just one of many. And they say that the authorities had no idea what plans were being hatched because these guys didn't do their job right. The whole scandal is that these agents, there were so many agents in amongst these nationalist groups that they were really running things. And they were coming up with things for the groups to do. And it was all their ideas. And when they go to decide whether these groups are inimical to the Constitution or they are a danger to Germany and Germans, they find that, well, everything was done by these agents. So much of it was anyway, by the government itself. So they can't use that. So therefore the whole thing falls apart. And that is expected to happen again. And this is a big scandal in Germany, because the bad way that German security services has handled everything. And it's never been good ever since it started after World War II. They've always not been very effective, and they've always there's always been too many of them. They just overdo it. They overdo the whole thing. But they say that they can't function without themselves. They say that they need informants, because it has been suggested that they drop that informant business, that they have some agents going around and getting people to talk, but they don't actually put people into these organizations who are pretending to be real members of these organizations and then running, operating within it as a nationalist and so on, and anti-government and so on. But the security service says that's not good enough. They can't get the information they need by doing that. They can't get the information they need by just having agents going around secretly, finding people who will talk and so on. They need to have informants inside to learn what's going on. Well, and what do they learn? What have they ever learned? They're trying to make a big deal out of this NSU, that it was real, so that they can justify their existence all these years. They finally, discovered some great terrorism, bunch of murders that never were done, I am quite sure. And so is Gunter and a lot of other people. They were never committed by this trio, but they were committed probably by the Turkish underground, the Turkish mafia, and all of those Turkish criminals that are in Germany. It's part of their own thing. And also the last one was like 9 years ago. And since then, or maybe it wasn't as many as nine, but at least 5 years ago was the last murder, and none have been committed since. So what happened to this terror cell? Why did they stop doing it? And then 5 years later, they're robbing banks and somehow, I think they were murdered. I think they were murdered. They didn't commit suicide. And this whole thing has been hatched. It's intelligence and the way they operate. They're awful. They're just awful. And the German people are getting wind of that, and that's what's going on there now with that. Now, another thing that I can talk about is, and again, I'm dealing with Germany again, because I've been reading these articles about Germany, this is from Der Spiegel, where they feel so for the Roma. And right now, Roma, who are living in Serbia and Macedonia, and those are South East Europe, down where there's a lot of poverty. And of course these Roma somehow got there, but they want to get into Germany. And a lot of them, the ones they talk about in this article, were once living in Germany because they were invited in as guest workers. But at that time, this was like 20 years ago or so, Germany really needed workers. And so they allowed a lot of people to come in, but they did make it clear that they were only there while they were, you know, while they needed them, and that then they would have to leave, and they were probably paid pretty well, so they were all quite willing to go. But Germany did deport them when the time was up, and they did send them back. So, you know, they were good about that, the Germans. But now these people, after having lived in Germany, and now they're back in these particular ones in Serbia and Macedonia, where nobody's helping them like it was in, like they did in Germany. And there's no welfare for them, and there's no nothing. And they live like, well, I want to tell you, they have a bunch of pictures there. And, you know, I don't stand on any kind of protocol. I'm just going to say what I think. The photos of these people are enough to make you want to puke. They look nothing like Germans. They are, some of them are just darn right freakish, and they could never become Germans. But they want to go to Germany and be Germans. You know, they want to go there and stay there and live there. They want to, you know, be allowed in. They want to immigrate there. There are these Roma people who, okay, they've had tough lives, but so that's not, you know, it's not my responsibility for everybody that's had a tough life. It's not your responsibility. It's not Germany's responsibility. Because there's billions and billions of people in the world who are in very, live in very poor conditions. But, you know, Europe or white people can't take care of all these people. But this is what somehow they're trying to convince us of. They're trying to convince us that somehow we have to, well, take as many as you can, you know, take as many as you can to help these poor people. Why? Why even is it any responsibility of ours to help them? It's not. And this is what we need to be real clear about. So, you know, but now the European, because of the European Union and because of allowing Serbia and Macedonia, I don't know if they're in the European Union, but they've applied for it. So they have some kind of status. And the European Union has begun allowing visa-free travel for Serbs and Macedonians. And since then, all these Roma who live there have been applying for asylum into Europe, but mostly into Germany. They mostly want to go to Germany. And, well, there's a whole story about, it's disgusting, about this guy living in Germany who's, I guess, now considered a German, but he's I couldn't tell, because see, they won't say, they won't write it that way. I couldn't tell if he was a native, you know, a native German, or if he was one of these foreigners, or maybe a Roma who managed to get into Germany and get the right papers and so on and stay there, because he's in Germany, he's considered a German, but he's willing to marry this Roma girl, then the plan, you know, they've been talking together on the internet, and she's not too bad looking, but she's unhappy about it, because she said, and even the reporter said, he's fat, and he's, I guess he's kind of repulsive, so, but he's willing to marry this fairly nice looking Roma girl. You know, she's young, and this, they say that she's, you know, her family holds her as high value because she's still a virgin. So they want her to marry this guy, and then he's going to take her. Well, she'll be there with him in Germany, and then he's going to bring her whole family to Germany, and that's how they're going to get there. So, you know, they're working this whole thing out, and she said she didn't really want to do it. But then at the same time, she said, well, I guess it might be the best thing for my family, because they don't have any, you know, future where they are. And if they can get into Germany, and you know how the Germans take care of, good care of everybody. You know, I tell you, I would really like for Germany to, because this is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But I would like for Germany to leave the Eurozone just cold. Just leave it. Because there's also so much going on now where all these nations, and I know that Germany's led by terrible people, I know what they are, but still, I'm concerned for the people of Germany not being totally destroyed and diluted. In the Eurozone, you've got all these, you've got Greece and you've got Spain now and Portugal, and they're all blame Germany for all their problems. They blame Merkel as though she's responsible for it. She's just going along with the European Union. But because the European Union seems to, you know, enforce things for them, you know, enforce all these liberal measures that they like, they're not going to blame the European Union. They're going to blame Germany and put a mustache on Merkel and say that she's responsible for it all. It's just ridiculous. There's no sense to it. And nobody, the trouble is that there's nobody in influence who really will really tell the truth. You know, one of the last people who did was that banker, now I'm not going to be able to think of his name, that I talked about a couple of programs, and he wrote a couple of books, and he's still around, but you know, you don't hear much from him, because you see, when you first come out with something that's a big and newsworthy, like his book, he got lots of publicity. But as time goes on, they just cut him off, and they never talk about him or his ideas or any of that. They just pat you. Just all you hear about is what the European Union wants to do and how we need to worry about the human rights of all these people and let them come into Europe. They have a right to. They're Europeans, blah, blah, blah. So, I think I'll leave that and go on to a report that because of Eurozone recession, immigration to Germany is rising. And even though immigration to Germany is nothing like the immigration that we have here in the United States, it really isn't. Germany is a very small country, and so it makes a big impact. You know, a few more million that come in of these people who go straight on the welfare rolls, straight on the welfare rolls. They're not coming to work. They're coming as refugees and so on. They don't have any skills. And particularly if they're people like Roma people, God, they are some horrible looking people. And they are so used to living in such terrible conditions. They have no culture whatsoever. They just don't belong. Anyway, this says that over 500,000 people arrived in Germany from abroad from January to June of this year, this 2012. In 6 months, 500,000 people arrived from abroad. And that was 66,000 more than came in the first half of 2011, an increase of 15%. So, let's see here. And more people are arriving from Greece and from Spain. Just think, where they're so angry at Germany, but if they can get in there, they sure will, because they'll have, you know, better opportunities. So they're probably, the ones who aren't getting in, to stay home, are probably hate Germany because they can't get in there where life is better. You know, when people do better than you do, it is as you tend to want to attribute that to reasons that are that show that there's, you know, that they're not good people and you are, and if they were fair, you would be doing better than you are, or maybe it's their fault that you're not, and so on. We have way too much of that. We should recognize when we're doing that. But more than 15,000 people arrived from Greece in the first 6 months of 2012. How did they get in? And that's a 78% increase. Well, because things are so bad in Greece, so they want to find somewhere else to go. And in Europe, because of the Eurozone laws and the European Union laws, there is no restriction on travel. If you want to go to another nation, there's no border controls or anything. you're free to go. And so you just show up, and they want to go to Germany because in Germany they don't want to let people starve. You know, in the Germans are more humanitarian than probably any other people in Europe, except maybe the British. They probably do a whole lot to take care of these people too, and make sure people aren't starving and so on. And they give them apartments, and they even give them transportation and so on, or they pay their transportation. They pay all kinds of stuff for them for like 6 months at least while they're trying to find a job. And if they don't, then I don't know what happens. Maybe supposedly they're supposed to leave, go back home, but I'm not sure. But they do that for a long time, and these people live better than a lot of German people. Now, 11,000 people arrived from Spain, which was a 53% increase over the previous year. And Hungary, which is not a Eurozone country, rose by 46%, although I don't have a number here, so it probably wasn't a very big number, because they're having tough economic conditions. So everybody wants to go to Germany. It's always been that way. Germany was the first nation to institute social benefits back under Bismarck. But I can't get into that, but they were. And Germany has always been a country to be very generous to people and to outsiders even, and to its own people. But the Scandinavian countries do that now even more than Germany. You know, they give away everything to these people. It's shocking, but it's true. Now, there's a little bit about when she went to Portugal. I was going to ask Gunther about that, but it's not much point in talking about it. Got something here on strikes. Well, I welcome anyone to call in if they want to call in to 830-443-4911, but I guess they don't. I still have the listeners. They're listening. They're listening, but they don't have anything to add to the program. Now, here is, strikes. The strikes are going on. Well, we've been reading that just lately. Let's see. I've got a bunch more stuff here. What is all this? Oh, that's old stuff. Okay. They're striking in Greece. They're striking in Spain. And in Spain, they have a 25% unemployment rate, which has put the country at the heart of the European Union social unrest. So they're angry at Germany, blaming it onto Germany in large part. And the Greeks blame it onto Germany, and they're striking. I don't blame them for what they're doing. They should be going after the banks, but I think that these news stories, they will never mention it. You know, all these news stories, except for the claims conference one, the Holocaust survivors, they never mention Jews. You never see the word Jews. But here I've got, it says, there was a story. Okay. There was it just came up in the new Spiegel. They've got a long three-part article about the banking problem, and they call it playing poker with trillions, a prison of debt on both sides of the Atlantic. And they start out by saying this stupid thing here. Be it the United States or the European Union, most Western countries are so highly indebted today that the markets have a greater say in their policies than the people. Why are democratic countries so pathetic when it comes to managing their money sustainably? Can you imagine the gall of them writing this as though they don't know? They're saying that Western countries have become so indebted that the markets, in other words, the banks and the funds and the so on and so forth, have a greater say in their internal policies than the people of these countries. And they say, how did this happen? God, it's the Jews, stupid, is my answer. You know, doesn't everybody know how it happened? It happened through usury. It happened through the banking system. It happened through the huge push to create debt, countries to go into debt. And it's still going on. And then at Der Spiegel, they act like they have to write three long parts to a long, long article asking questions about it, and they cannot come up with any real answers except phony ones. And in all of this, you do not find the word Jew, because I looked through it all. Oh, I don't know, maybe there was somewhere in the last part or something, but I don't think so. You know, they do not talk about the Jew ever. They talk about all kinds of stuff and what's wrong with European countries and that they can't manage their money. They can't form good governments, that the governments don't work, and so on. In part three, I just copied a little bit of that, so I must have thought it was good, so I'll read it. In part three, they say, titled, A European Depression and a Pending Japanese Disaster, because governments are in disagreement, bodies are taking their place that are turning into ersatz governments, the central banks. Well, what do you know? They're admitting it right here, but somehow it's the fault of our own governments that this is happening. It's the fault of us that other bodies than our governmental bodies are taking the place that is supposed to be our government. And who are these other bodies? The central banks. Big, you know, as though we didn't know that. They say the ECB's decision to buy up unlimited amounts of the sovereign debt of European countries, this is now we're talking about the European central bank's decision, is a replacement for political solutions for which there are currently no majorities in the governments and parliaments of Eurozone countries. Well, gosh, you know, I was wanting to mention that in the rest of this year, what's left of 2012, I'm going to do some more serious study into the protocols of the Elders of Zion. I find that there's a whole lot of value in that, and I think that it has been sidelined and by the people accepting what the Jewish pronouncement about that has been, just like they sidelined Henry Ford. They've sidelined all kinds of people from talking about it, but it's still around, and I have some ideas about it. But, you know, you will find all this in the protocols, that this was their plan, and it is taking place. And, you know, it is so far advanced. And they thought they had it all worked out already at the time they wrote it. Now, I'm sure that the protocols were written in the 1800s, not in the early 1800s, probably, but obviously they were written before the 1890s, I think, and I also think that while the current protocol that came out and that we know about is was written about that time, that there were previous documents going back, who knows how many, you know, how far. There have been documents that have been passed along and kept and so on that are similar to this, although probably not as far advanced. And it just kept getting further advanced and changing and becoming more modern and so on until the one that we got available to us, which, in my opinion, should not be considered to be a forgery, because it has too much to teach us. And there's, from what I've learned so far, and I'll continue to dig into it, there is the evidence that they use to say it's a forgery is very thin and can be attacked, can be questioned. It's not firm at all. So, you know, but it's not, it's also not firm who wrote it or where it came from, or what Jews did it or how, you know, none of that. It's very, it's just one of those things that, that you can't actually get to the bottom of, but you can certainly look and see what it's talking about. And I've been reading the protocols again in some of the later chapters there that I didn't read originally. And, you know, if you take the time to really go over it, if you take the time, it's just hard to read. And I actually, there are some versions that are put into better English. The one that I have that I bought from, I think I bought it from the IHR with that red and white cover. It's the original Victor Marsden translation. Well, it's not very good English sometimes. And you have to, it kind of puts you off the go, I'm tired of reading this. But you have to really go through the sentence. And I found that when I do that carefully and follow, you know, and some of the words are actually misspelled or little words are wrong. Like they mean, it's supposed to be or and they've got of or things like that. They're little errors. Which could come from I don't know where. So you have to adjust for all of that. And when you really do that and spend the time, every sentence is so full of intelligent meaning and says so much that it's one of those things that, you know, takes time. I don't know, but I feel like I have to put some time into it because I think it's so very important. So in this stupid Der Spiegel, they write all this stuff trying to fool people into thinking that these European governments and European peoples were just unable to rule themselves, unable to deal with money and unable to keep from spending too much money, unable to keep from borrowing money, blah, blah. It's all our fault. And this is, as I said, where you find this in the protocols is that they will demoralize us and make us want to throw over our own governments, overthrow and be so glad for some better group to take over, which is going to be the Jews in some kind of disguise. You know, for them to take over because they're going to do a better job. They're going to, you know, amongst religious people, they think of it as the Antichrist. But it is like that. I mean, it's that you're gonna throw over what you have because you've decided, you've been brought to believe that it cannot work, it's no good, it works against you, and you're gonna reach out and accept something that seems like strength, power. The way they try to portray Adolf Hitler, actually, but he didn't really mean it. You know, he didn't really have the good of the people in mind, but something that would be, some savior, some kind of a savior is going to do it. And we're all going to go for it. And, you know, of course we're not going for it now, but in another generation, we're being so dumbed down. I could see it wouldn't take long before people would go for it. And then they would be tightening their, then they would be in charge and tightening their control and so on. And you can see how this is working out in this very article in Der Spiegel. How far should I go back to read this? The decision by the American Federal Reserve Bank to inject hundreds of billions of dollars into the markets again to stimulate economic growth. Results from the inability of Democrats and Republicans to agree on a compromise between limiting debt and economic stimulus programs. So they're now here, they're blaming it on Democrats and Republicans. And we've all come to hate the Democrats and Republicans. We hate these parties. They can't do anything. They don't do anything right. Well, I think this is all engineered to make us hate our own governments, our own parties, our own people, and to eventually to be willing to give it all up. And a lot of white nationalists, I think, are being used. I don't think that they're agents. They're being used, and people think they're smarter than they really are. We have too many people in the white movement say some of them were over there at Countercurrents, I don't mind saying so, who think they're really smart and really, and they've got these people writing in their comment section, telling them how smart they are. What great stuff. And I think a lot of that is state is put in there, you know, because it sort of seems kind of suspicious to me, especially some of the more recent ones. These people don't trust these people. Think for yourself. Please think. And in order to think for ourselves, we really need, there's nothing more helpful, I think, than to know what's in the protocols. And that's what Henry Ford and his people thought, and the International Jew is good also. So keep listening. You know, I really believe all this. So keep listening to the International Jew. Read along with it, and I'm going to be doing some programs on the protocols, much to the disdain, dismay of some some people that I'm associated with. But I hope that I'll be able to come up with some interesting things. And so thank you for listening tonight. I'm very sorry that Gunther Deckard didn't show up. I hope he's all right. I don't have any hard feelings about it. I did the best I could tonight. And remember that this is, there won't be a Saturday afternoon show next week or for a few weeks, but it will return again in January. And do listen to me on the Heretics Hour and the International Jew. So this is Carolyn Yeager, and this is the White Network bringing you all of this. And thank you for listening, and I appreciate all of your support.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.